Hello, welcome back to Edgewood College's Astronomy Podcast. I'm your host, Melissa, an undergraduate student in physics and earth science, exploring her way through college and the cosmos. Today, I am joined by fellow host, Kylie Martins, astronomy and physics instructor at Edgewood College. Kylie, it's been a while since we've last spoken. How are you?
Doing all right, given the circumstances of the days. We're recording this in November 2020, so we're well set into the pandemic fatigue of the year. So we're just trying to find new ways to stay entertained and stay connected. So it's nice to chat with you today.
Same and good to hear. I want to bring a question in that has plagued humans since the dawn of time. Who are we in the grand scheme of things?
That question seems a little too big for me to handle. Can you give me something a little simpler?
Yeah, let's break that down a little more. The Big Bang, not the show, occurred around 13.6 billion years ago. And our solar system formed around 8 to 12 billion years ago. This doesn't come close to the full timeline. We don't really understand the timeline, and the universe does weird things like expand. And to study this, we have to study cosmology. So, Kylie, tell me, what is cosmology?
Well, that's a question I can't answer, so I'm glad you asked. In short, cosmology is the study of the origins of the universe along with the evolution of the universe. So usually people in the public tend to stop thinking after the first half of that, in terms of what we study. So cosmologists don't just study the Big Bang theory, but also it turns out they study how the universe changes over time. So we're really interested in questions like, what is the universe made of? How does it change over time? Does it change shape? Does it change size? What sorts of things are in our universe? What is dark matter and dark energy? What are the distances to things in that universe? And even questions like, how does the universe end? So there's a lot more to studying cosmology than just the Big Bang theory.
So, what are the differences between cosmology and astronomy? When we usually think of cosmology, we may associate it with relativity or Einstein, but what are the differences if there are any?
So astronomy tends to be this umbrella term that kind of harbors a lot of different things, and cosmology is a specific person or thing underneath that umbrella. Cosmology is typically associated with relativity for two main reasons. The first being both are things we generally don't understand very well, so it's pretty easy to get those two things mixed up. And two, general relativity tends to tell us about the geometry of our universe, which is really important if you're going to talk about how the universe changes. So, if you want to talk about how something changes, you need to know what that thing looks like before and after.
All right. So how do we know what it looks like? Do we still see evidence from the Big Bang that can prove this?
In short, we think the universe is flat. So, that's exciting. We know this because you have to make four 90-degree turns to complete a full rotation. So if you're standing there at home, you can turn yourself 90 degrees four times and you'll end up facing the same direction again. And mathematically, that defines a flat space, the fact that you can make four 90-degree turns and end up exactly where you started. And we've done this in space, but that's not good enough for astronomers. We want to be able to study things outside of our nearby surroundings. And we've actually found this thing called the cosmic microwave background. And this cosmic microwave background was actually found on accident by two radio astronomers. They had a radio antenna and they kept trying to fight birds off of it. So birds would make nests in it and near it. And so they would actually keep shotguns nearby to try to scare off the birds and they'd remove the nests. And after a while, that wasn't the birds anymore. They checked the electrical wiring and that wasn't working. And there was this noise, this fuzziness that essentially looks like the fuzziness on your TV when you turn it on and there's no signal. And no matter where they pointed their antenna, it showed up. This thing existed. And so how we discovered the microwave background is kind of a funny story. But the fact that it exists gives us a super distinct signal that's essentially the signature of our universe. And the signature, or these temperature variations is what they are, tell us that our space is flat. If you look at these variations on different shapes of space and you compare that modeling to the actual data we have, we fit perfectly into that flat category.
That is interesting. Now, another thing that we hear a lot about is expansion of the universe. But what's causing the universe to expand? We get this question a lot. So does it mean that we are looking back into time as we look into our universe, or are we really looking into the future?
We're actually looking to our past as we look out from the Earth. So there's no such thing as this future look in time when you look outward from our Earth. I'm sure you've heard of the 8-minute rule with the sun. Yeah, that 8-minute rule means that we're always 8 minutes behind. So when we're seeing light from the sun, we're actually seeing stuff that happened 8 minutes ago. So if the sun were to miraculously disappear, we wouldn't see, or we wouldn't know for about 8 minutes. This rule holds true for the rest of the universe too. The further out you look, the further behind the times that you are. And we often forget this because we're on Earth and we don't really ever have to worry about how fast light travels. But because light has to travel, like everything else, when those distances get to be super large, that time also gets to be super large. And so we have this difference between our perception on Earth and the universe. And those distances are getting bigger, or those distances are expanding. The distance between those things is expanding because space itself is actually getting bigger. And we don't know why exactly.
So the expansion of the universe ties into some new research that is coming out recently. And we understand that dark matter is something we cannot readily see. And this is something relatively new to science. So what's the simplest way that we could describe dark matter and its energy? And we can't see it. But why is that?
We honestly have no idea. We know that together, those two things, dark energy and dark matter, make up about 96% of our known universe. But nothing else about those two things is for sure yet. When we talk about dark matter, it's almost easier to talk about what it is not rather than to talk about what it is. So aside from dark, we don't think it interacts with normal matter. So we don't think that it's what we call baryonic, or it's composed of protons, neutrons, electrons, those sorts of things. We don't think that it's antimatter, because if we had matter and antimatter interacting, we would see a very unique energy signature come out of that interaction. And we don't see those things. So we don't think it's normal matter, and we don't think that it's antimatter. We do think that it has something to do with weakly interacting massive particles, and these particles don't produce or absorb light. They don't radiate light. They don't really interact with normal matter the way we would think they do. But we do think that the way that they're connected to normal matter is through some sort of gravitational force or gravitational interaction that we don't really understand given our standard model of particle physics. So when we start talking about dark matter and what it actually is, we're sort of leaving the realm of astronomy behind and starting to talk about particle physics and quantum physics, which is a whole nother topic, of course.
Of course. Could you actually expand on the idea of dark energy and what that really is? And there is a little bit of a difference between dark matter and energy, right?
Yeah, there's a huge difference between dark energy and dark matter. Dark matter is the extra matter in the universe that we can't really see. And dark energy is sort of this totally different beast. We don't really know what it is, but there are a lot of ideas behind what it is. So one thing that comes out of Einstein's theory is that dark energy has to do with this thing called the cosmological constant. Basically, space has a property, just like every other material, right? Think about like a trampoline being stretchy. That's the idea. And this material essentially carries energy with it. What that means is that as more space exists, more energy exists, instead of diluting the energy like we normally would think. And so it starts to bring up a whole bunch of very strange physics questions. And Einstein didn't even like this idea on his own. He actually was very resistant to having to put in the cosmological constant and didn't really understand why. So that's one idea. And maybe that's the point where the theory starts to break down. We don't really know yet. Another idea is quantum mechanical, which is, again, a totally different beast. And we're slowly starting to leave the realm of cosmology and astronomy when we talk about quantum mechanics. But the idea is that space is quote unquote empty, and it's actually filled with things that temporarily exist. So things popping in and out of the existence. So think of a balloon, and inside the balloon, you fill it up with air. And as time goes on, that air is going to leak out of the balloon and you'll eventually have a flat balloon. But what if you blew up the balloon and it spontaneously deflated with little particles popping in and out of the balloon? So you'd have one air molecule inside and then it would pop outside and then it would pop back inside. And so you have this sort of random existence of these particles. The problem with that idea is when you do the calculation, it's about 100,000 times too much. So we don't really know what's going on there. Unless Einstein's theory is wrong, then maybe that calculation would be right. And then the last idea is some sort of dynamical energy fluid, kind of like the ether in electromagnetism. So we used to think that an ether existed that electromagnetic waves had to move through. Turns out they don't need an ether to move through. But it's the same sort of idea that you need a medium to move this stuff. So maybe space is filled with this fluid, and this fluid's called dark energy.
So the question then remains, was Einstein wrong or was he correct?
We think he was correct because we haven't been able to prove him wrong. So in science, we have this idea of acceptability of truths.
Right.
So we have a certain amount of truth that we expect, and we have our process for figuring out that truth. And so Einstein's theory holds up to all of our tests so far. However, it could still be that one thing proves the whole theory wrong. We don't know.
Time will tell. Let's go into the next theory that we're starting to understand. So we know that there's a model, a theoretical model that exists, which states that the universe is made up of around 68% dark energy and 27% dark matter. But so how was this dark matter discovered, and how can we find something that we can't see?
Think about being on a playground and you are on a merry-go-round and I'm running around the circle and pushing the merry-go-round and making you go faster and faster. If you start at the middle, as you walk out from the center, you are going to be moving faster and faster and faster. If the merry-go-round was much bigger, that would hold true. No matter how big the merry-go-round is, as you walk further out, you will continue to move faster. This should be true no matter where you look, no matter what you do. That's a physical property. Physics doesn't change because you decided to change your environment. That doesn't hold true for galaxies. Galaxies are essentially disks, just like merry-go-rounds. And as you go further out, we should expect them to move faster and faster. But what we actually see is on the outer edges of the galaxy, things actually start to taper off. We reach this threshold level where things can't go any faster. And so it kind of just goes at a single speed towards the edges of the galaxy. So we think that there's something that we can't see that's got to be there to slow these things down. Or Einstein was wrong.
Or yes, or Einstein was wrong. In the last week, on our page and Facebook, we had posted an article in regards to the probability of seeing dark matter differently in the matter of halos. Could you elaborate on what these halos would be and if they're any way similar to gravitational lensing?
But to get to the first question, what is a halo? A dark matter halo is essentially like a cloud or a shield. It kind of clumps up around a galaxy, and we tend to see them in puffy cloud-like shapes around large amounts of matter, like galaxies or dwarf galaxies or star clusters and things like that. So we see clumps of dark matter in these very concentrated areas. And since dark matter has mass, even though we can't see it, we see those gravitational effects, like the lensing effects and the oblonging of shapes, or the slowing of gravitational rotation curves.
Interesting. All right, so I read another article, and this was published in September. We say the term gravitational lensing when we look at dark matter or things in the universe we cannot see. So what is the relationship?
That's a really great question. To put it simply, gravity. Since dark matter is this super massive thing, and it exists in halos found around galaxies or essentially light sources, we see these effects of gravity on that light. So we see stars look like arcs in the sky instead of points. So that's what we call gravitational lensing.
I read an article published in September that discussed the production of a dark matter map. They measured lensing distortions so they could measure amounts and distributions of dark matter from three galaxy clusters, and it essentially holds them together. How do we know that it's dark matter? Because it doesn't match our model. It's 10 times stronger than expected.
It's hard to say, because this science is so new and new things are coming out every day and new studies are coming out every week and new data is being collected. But this specific study that you're referencing found that dark matter was actually also strong near the center of galaxies as well as in the halos on the outside. And this is something we didn't really expect to find. We didn't expect dark matter to be present where there is a lot of normal matter. So this study obviously suggests that we need to take a closer look at the effects of dark matter near the center of galaxies.
All right, Kylie, my last question for you. So out of curiosity, what intrigues you the most about the idea of dark energy or dark matter?
I think the fact that we know virtually nothing about a majority of our universe. 96% of our universe is composed of this dark matter or dark energy. And when we start talking about it, we're pushing the boundaries of our current understanding. And it probably requires some combination of quantum mechanics and relativity, or maybe relatively altogether is wrong. But regardless, we need some sort of solidification of those ideas before we can actually start to understand whatever dark matter or dark energy actually is. I think what intrigues me the most is that we don't know and we have more questions than answers. And as a scientist, I feel at home when I have more questions than I do answers.
Kylie, thank you for this awesome discussion. And listeners, thank you for joining us today. Stay tuned for the next episode. Bye.